Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. Hope things are going well wherever you are. And 2024 is off to a rapid start here, only a couple weeks left in January, and seems to never slow down for us. But those watching on Rumble, I'd appreciate it if you would like and follow to help it get out to more people. That's always a blessing. Those that are subscribers, thank you again, as always, for being a part of what we do by funding us with your $5 a month. And that's a tremendous blessing to us. Today, I'm going to interview Scott Shera. And he had the nightmare experience of having a child get COVID. And because of all the fear put out there, they thought, oh, we better take her to the hospital because her oxygen has gotten down kind of low and we better take her in there. And then the absolute horror, she never came out. She died there. A sweet girl named Grace. And he had to endure all that. But as he was trying to deal with that and move forward, he started to realize he had been told a lot of inconsistent things by the medical establishment. And so he started to dig in, and he spent hundreds of hours studying her medical records and the protocols they used. And then all of a sudden he realized she didn't die in the hospital. She was murdered in the hospital because she had Down syndrome. And today I'm going to interview him. He's going to tell his own story in his own words. But there's a lot for us to learn. There's a lot for us to understand. So the same thing doesn't happen to us or people that we love. And we're aware of what's going on. But we also get behind them in their fight. They are now suing the hospital and the different doctors and nurses that had things to do with this, where they purposefully prescribed things that would have killed anyone. If they were perfectly healthy, they would have died. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. A couple key takeaways before we get into it and why this is so important is your whole life and my whole life, we've been taught you can trust the doctor. You can trust the medical establishment. They have nothing in mind. They don't care about the money or anything. They're just there to make you and help you live a long, healthy life. And I think most of you know that's not true anymore after COVID. But I want to tell you, it's really, really not true. The only point of them helping you, giving you a medication, or having you, admitting you to the hospital for something is to make money off of you. And if you are worth more dead to them, like everyone was during COVID, then alive, you will not come out of there, as some of the hospitals in New York had 100% casualty rates to COVID because they were getting over $300,000 per patient from the government. You don't have to go to the insurance companies. You don't have to do any of that stuff. And we saw, when you lose the Judeo-Christian foundations in a culture and you have a profit motive to use your medical malpractice to even take the life of someone, you'll do it. And you're totally exempt from any kind of prosecution or anything because, an emergency use authorization or whatever. But anyway, watch this interview and then share it with those that might need to be awakened from their slumber. And I think it'll be a great blessing to you. Scott Shera, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, Curtis, it's really a gift to be on your program. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I came across your story of what happened to your daughter and watched the documentary that was made about that, and it really impacted me in a special way. And I'll have the links below for everybody watching this to watch that documentary to give way more facts than we'll be able to give today. But we want to tell this story because it's so important and it could impact your life in a very important way, possibly even saving your life or members of your family by understanding some things that have changed in our country over the last 50, 60 years. But Scott, why don't you just start by just starting kind of at the beginning, just an overview of your daughter Grace and kind of life before COVID and then as you came into the COVID season, as we all did.
Sure. Yeah. So, well, you gave me that opportunity. So I'm going to go back to September 22nd of 2002, that's the day Grace was born. But then, of course, 9 months earlier, Grace was conceived. So this is going to be R-rated for anybody watching. So what happened, Curtis, is that we had been following the American dream. So at that point, we had 2.1 kids, 1.7 dogs, no cats, thankfully. And ultimately, my wife and I were 39 years old then, and we decided to turn the baby department over to God, you know, strangely, but we did. And, you know, I always tease, Cindy is my wife's name. I always tease that she's Fertile Myrtle. So, you know, 5 minutes later, she became pregnant and we had a beautiful girl that we were able to watch grow and to be an angel. And we named her Grace after God's grace. Grace had Down syndrome. And she was an absolute gift from God. You know, when you look at what she knew God better than any person who I have ever met. I mean, that is a pretty bold claim, but I mean, it is true. You know, think this through, Curtis. She called me earthly dad. I mean, that's totally on her own.
Yeah.
You know, how does somebody, you know, we perceive Down syndrome as, you know, they're lower IQ, but, you know, it doesn't take a high IQ to be one of God's. And, you know, God tells us that it's the little children, right? We have to come to him like a child. Well, Grace did that. And, you know, she was special. Yeah. I'll just
think, just stopping you right there for a second, because you don't know this about me. Back in college 40 years ago, we had to pick a community service. And I picked working with the Special Olympics in Los Angeles, Chuck Swindoll's church. And so for 2 years, that was my activity. And I got to see what you got to see. They are so special. They are so wonderful. The joy, the innocence, the love, so on a small scale, I don't understand at the level, but I want you to know that. And I grew to love and to cherish them and realize they really are special. It's like a special gift God has put in here with someone that doesn't understand all the complexities, the intellectualism, but they understand everything that's important, and they're such a blessing. Anyway, keep going.
Well, it's, now that you said that, I'm just going to go on. You know, I always like to share a story about Grace, and I, you know, I've been on so many interviews, I don't pre-script anything, but, you know, the stories come to my head as I'm being interviewed. And the story that comes to my head right now when you just said that is the county fair. And so Grace, she kept me young. I'm 60 years old, and, you know, she kept me. I've aged a ton since she's been gone. But anyway, county fairs were one of the things that we went to. And I mean, I had to go on every ride with her, you know, and so most of the rides, you know, I'm not built for that. But, you know, you go on them because, you know, your daughter wants to go, right? So I would sit down on the bench after a lot of the rides and let my stomach catch up. And, you know, I'm sitting on the bench after one of the rides at the county fair, and a gentleman that our family knows came in, and I really did not care for him. And my attitude toward him was based on the fact that not only was he gay, but he promoted it. He got married in a Unitarian church. And I thought, you know, but I never talked with him about it, right? I just had this attitude toward him. And, you know, I'm sitting on the bench, and Grace goes running up to him and gives him a big hug. And I thought to myself, I sat there and I just said, she can do what I can't do. And that's, she you know, how are you going to connect with somebody like that if you have an attitude toward them? You can't, right? But she connected. Anyway, that's just you know, I could give you 1,000 stories about Grace, but that's the one that popped into my head right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, everybody wants to hear what happened with the hospital, which I get. I mean, that's, I wouldn't be here talking to you if Grace wouldn't have been murdered. And, you know, I'm not a dummy. I'm just a dad, but I'm not a dummy. And, you know, so when I call somebody, or when I say that somebody's murdered, it isn't because it's my daughter. It's because what's happened since Grace's death is I have become a full-time advocate, researcher. I've owned a business for over half of my life, and I turned the business over to my men to run so I can do this full-time. So I work between 75 to 90 hours every single week on advocacy, the story, lawsuit, and research. And at the point where I realized Grace was murdered, I had 500 hours of research into her medical records. So it was not a joke. When I'm saying it, it's I'm not patting myself on the back saying I'm not a dummy. It's just not the point. But my degree is DAD. I don't have any special degree, but God gave me a fire to figure this out. And all of a sudden I figured out Grace was murdered. And once that happened, it changed my whole trajectory. And you know, I'm doing something I never thought I would do, because you become responsible. Once you know something, you become responsible to share it with as many people who want to hear the message. And so that's what's happened. And so we'll get into that. But just the short story with Grace's hospital stay, and I'll start with the most important piece, which, so it started on October 6th. Actually, I'll go back to October 1st of 2021. We tested Grace with a home test for COVID. And so why did we do that? Well, we did it because the propaganda had gotten to us. At that point, I was not awake to anything. Relative to the medical profession. I mean, I shouldn't say anything, because we were awake to vaccines. Grace was never vaccinated with anything, including the COVID jab, because we knew that it wasn't right. And it was relying on men instead of God. But that had not percolated through my brain enough to realize the whole medical industrial complex is satanic. Yeah, I didn't understand that at that time. Yeah. I'm not talking about, you know, going in and getting a broken bone set. That's not what I'm talking about. Right. I'm talking about when you think it through at a different level. So think it through at a spiritual level. At a spiritual level, Satan's game is souls. And so how do you win souls? Well, you have to convince them to believe in anything but God. So then when you think about Satan has had 6,000 years to orchestrate this insanity, well, you realize, oh my gosh, he introduced viruses that don't exist. Then why are viruses in the pipeline? Well, because they need vaccines to facilitate taking care of viruses that don't exist. Well, what's going on? Well, then the whole medical industrial complex gets developed. All why? Because we don't want to rely on the only one who can save us, which is Jesus Christ our Lord, period. So I mean, that's the standard, or that not the standard, the setup for what happened with COVID. So COVID, you and I were talking off camera, COVID woke a lot of people up, and it should have. I mean, it woke me up. My daughter Grace died to wake me up short term. I mean, I don't know what all God has planned, but I mean, I know I don't know where I'd be today if she would not have died, but I am in the process of waking up. And, you know, so now what was my purpose of even doing that? What happened, or giving you that background, is that when propaganda starts influencing us to the point where we become fearful, that is God's warning to us to go opposite. Well, the fear propaganda had gotten to me enough that we bought a home COVID test on October 1st. And the reason we did is because we thought we were going to do our civic duty, right? Grace just had a cold. We were going to go to a wedding that day. And we just thought, well, we better not go if she has COVID. Okay. So, I mean, this is pretty typical of people at that time, right?
That's right.
So we buy the home COVID test. We get her on ivermectin, vitamins, and, you know, we were prepared. But the one thing we also did is we had bought a pulse ox, which is a little meter you put on your finger to measure your oxygen saturation. Ultimately, all of this came out of the FLCCC protocols. And so we were, even though they are not part of the medical industrial complex per se, they still are trusting in men. Okay. So we started trusting in a different set of men, the ones running FLCCC. So we buy the pulse ox, we start measuring Grace's oxygen. And on October 6th, her oxygen dropped to 88%. And the protocol at the time said if that number goes below 94%, admit yourself to the hospital. If we would have never taken Grace to the hospital, she would be alive today. And I know that with 100% certainty because I went into a different hospital 3 days after Grace's death, and I just about died. Her last day on earth was October 13th. I went in on October 16th, and that hospital turned me around in 24 hours. And I had significantly worse symptoms than Grace. But what they did was they used protocols that were 180 degrees different. And when we checked Grace into the hospital, the emergency room physician said, we'll just check her in, put her on oxygen and a steroid for a few days and get her out of here. And I thought, well, that makes sense. It's kind of a precautionary protocol. And if they would have only done that, Grace would be alive today. But what they did, I was physically with Grace from the 6th until the 10th of October. I was taken out by an armed guard on the 10th. Now that we've looked at the records in detail, I see that they started Grace on a sedation med called Presidex on October 9th. And, you know, so the excuse they use is she's agitated, blah, blah, blah. Well, she's not agitated at all. Grace was just fine. I was with her. After they kicked me out, we had 47 hours without an advocate in the room with Grace. We had to hire an attorney to get a replacement advocate. And the replacement became my daughter, Jessica. Cindy, my wife, couldn't do it because she was really sick. Presumably, you know, I don't know what she had, but I mean, we'll just call it COVID for argument's sake for this discussion. But she had something, she couldn't do it. We hired an attorney. 47 hours later, Jessica is able to advocate for Grace. Well, during that 47 hours, they increased the dose of Presidex 6 different times, the dosage rate. So they sedated my little buddy instead of taking care of her. And, you know, advocacy, it's another take-home message is, I understand what advocacy means now. At the time, I thought advocacy meant you're there with, you know, whoever, right? That you're, you know, in this case, my daughter, I'm there to make sure that, you know, she's just taken care of, you know, her pillows, her blankets. And, you know, but I didn't know that I had to micromanage the doctors, right? Yeah. You just assume that the white coat is there to take care of you, you know, and I did not understand what informed consent means at that time. Now I get it. And, you know, so now I speak out about what does it take to survive a hospital stay, because you can survive a hospital stay, but you have got to be proactive and not assume that they're there to take care of you. You know, and that means understanding advocacy and understanding informed consent. Well, ultimately, now we go to Grace's last day on earth, October 13th. That day for Cindy and I started with a phone call from the doctor. And the purpose of his call was to ask us for the fifth time if we would pre-authorize putting Grace on a ventilator just in case. And they frame this discussion as salespeople. It's like they're selling you a used car. You know, we just want you to pre-authorize this just in case, because these type of things tend to happen in the middle of the night when we can't get a hold of the family. Well, I walked into the hospital under the ventilator paradigm created by then President Trump, which is we have a ventilator shortage. We need to use the War Powers Act. So I thought, well, this is just a tool in the tool chest. Well, after the first time when they were pressuring me for a ventilator, I thought, well, something's up here. And I started doing research and then realized while Grace was in the hospital, I realized, oh my gosh, this thing is not a tool that's supposed to be used for COVID. Now that I've become a researcher, I mean, I really get it. It has a 90% kill rate, but the reason the hospitals are using it, and they're still using it today, is because of the FDA has authorized it under an emergency use authorization and incentivized it. And the incentivization is to the tune of, including the hospital stay, about a $300,000 payday to the hospital. So you can see why they are pushing you to be put on a ventilator. So we rejected the ventilator for the fifth time on that call. And that's where I believe they already knew we were going to reject it, because we had done it already four times prior. So plan B goes in the works. Now realize we're on the phone with him. While we're on the phone with him, he had said, well, you know, after we said no to the ventilator, let's get Grace out of bed today and work on nutrition and get, you know, we got to get her bowels moving so she can get home. And interestingly, he had already authorized strapping Grace down to the bed and made her defecate in the bed before the phone call. Okay. While we're on the phone with him, Curtis, he increased Presidex to the maximum allowable dose at 10:48 that morning, her last day. Simultaneous with hanging up the phone, he put a do not resuscitate order on Grace's chart illegally. Okay, so now that's why I say plan B was already in the works, all right? So we're not doing the ventilator. If we would have approved a ventilator, Grace would not have died on October 13th. She would have died 22 days later because that's the maximum payout formula for a ventilator. Okay, so plan B, the DNR has to be in place. They thought the Presidex was going to take Grace out, but it didn't. So now what they did, and this is where I got to the point of calling Grace's death murder. They combined Presidex with lorazepam and morphine. And if you look at the morphine package insert, it says to never combine those meds because they can cause death. And if you do combine them, you can imagine this thing is a concoction you're not supposed to do. It's what you do to euthanize a hospice care patient in their last half hour of life. And they gave Grace this concoction in a 29-minute window. It says on the package insert that if you do this to directly monitor the patient and keep the reversal drug bedside because there's such a high risk. Well, after they gave Grace morphine, no doctor or nurse stepped foot in the room. When a pharmacist called me after our story went national, and she saw our billboards on Gateway Pundit and said, "Hey, I have a Down syndrome daughter, and that's what motivated me to call you. I talked with her on the phone, and she said I'm a pharmacist, and what you are saying is true. This is what they do." And she said, "I am about to, I think I should quit." And I said, "Well, how are you handling it now, knowing that, you know, what happened?" She said, "Well, they wait, because I will not sign those orders. They wait till after my shift is over and they get another pharmacist to sign the orders." So then she walked me through the process. And that's the day I realized Grace was murdered. She said, "Scott, not only did the physician order those meds on Grace to kill her, but the pharmacist had to sign off on that order. Then because those meds are contraindicated, there's an internal alarm that they had to override. And in Grace's case, the nurse who injected Grace with those meds had 20 years of ICU experience." So that's the day I realized, oh my gosh, my daughter was murdered. And just to finish the story, and then we can go wherever you want to take it. Jessica is in the room with Grace. She feels Grace getting cold after the morphine. And so she's tries to get this ICU nurse to do something. She said, my sister's getting cold. And she said, "That's normal. Just cover her with a blanket." She wouldn't even come in the room. So now Jessica called Cindy and I panicking on a FaceTime call and said, "Dad, Grace's numbers are dropping like crazy." I said, "Get the nurses in." She said, "I've been trying. They refuse." Jessica estimated 30 nurses in the hallway at this point because of the shift change. And there was a guard at Grace's door. So now Cindy and I start screaming, "Save our daughter." And the nurses from outside the door holler back, "She's DNR." And we said, "She's not DNR, save our daughter." And they refused. And we watched Grace die on a FaceTime call at 7:27 p.m. on October 13th of 2021. And, you know, that's that ultimately, I mean, that's why you and I have met right now. But I mean, it was so horrific. I mean, you have to then I went into a hospital and, you know, you're working through all of this, you know, and ultimately God had quite an interesting plan for us. And, you know, I become a national spokesperson because of his plan. But, you know, what he had to do, and I'll just end with this for you to ask questions. But when I was in the hospital, you know, I had a lot of thinking to do, right? I just about died on October 16th. I'm processing my daughter dying. And at that point, he broke me. And he's got to break you to use you. And it isn't a one-time occurrence, as you know, but I mean, the breaking in this case had to do with forgiveness. because you can't be, God knew you can't have an angry dad out there. He knew that I had to forgive them. I had to forgive the doctors and nurses who murdered my daughter in order to be able to be God's spokesperson. And so, I mean, that's, people ask periodically, well, how did you forgive them? I said, I didn't. I can't. Nobody can forgive somebody who murdered your daughter. But if we can do that on our own, we have no gospel. So anyway, that's my intro, Curtis. Kind of a long intro, but go ahead.
No, that's great. Well, that's the power of Jesus and the gospel, where you can do something like that that you cannot do. And the testimony of doing that is what's so powerful, because a man that doesn't have Jesus does not understand it. That's impossible. And so it shows, no, it's only through Jesus. And so, no, that's such a rough story. But I can see, as we talked a little beforehand, how God had such a clear purpose in this. He's going to take sweet Grace home to heaven, where she's running on the streets of gold. But he was going to give you all a mission to love your neighbor by speaking truth, sharing this story, this powerful story, with others, and then just allowing him to bless your little loaves and fishes as you do this, where he spreads this far and wide. And who knows how many lives will be saved because of what happened. People that watch these things and go, oh my goodness. And so, it's so wonderful. One question before I ask you the next one. When I watched the documentary, my heart was drawn to your daughter, Jessica, in that I was concerned, is she doing well too, to be able to forgive and then use the energy to move forward?
In a little bit different way. I mean, so her level of forgiveness, it's, it didn't happen like a snap of a fingers with me, but it's a process with her. She's getting there. She's done some speaking. She's been on some interviews. She's not real comfortable with that, because what happened, a gift that God gave me is to compartmentalize the story. When I did, because I'm involved with the legal team, I break down at times, and it's because you start looking at those records and you start seeing the details. Well, for her to get ready for like the documentary, and we have another taping coming up next week that she'll be in for a different documentary, but she has to get herself in that mindset. And so that's really hard for her.
No, but I could tell it was watching that. My heart was like, oh, I'm going to be praying for her that she can deal with that and let it go, but then use that energy to accomplish great things and help others be spared the nightmare you all were drawn through. So that happened, and there's more details in the documentary that everyone can watch and needs to watch. But now something from that is, once you realize, okay, this wasn't an accident, this is a protocol, what they do. Talk for a minute just how, and I felt this from the beginning, I felt like this is something to weed out the elderly, the disabled. The way they were, everything they were doing is like, no, this is going to hurt the most vulnerable people, the way they're doing it. But did you feel that too? Like, no, this is cleansing society of who they feel are, useless in their little worldview of, whatever.
Well, yeah, it's not a feeling. It's a fact.
Yes.
And I can prove it in this short time that we have, I think, very succinctly. And I can prove it by first talking about the banality of evil. So the banality of evil, that term was coined by Hannah Arendt when she couldn't wrap her head around what happened during World War II. How could everybody be in on this, right? And so when she studied it, she came up with that term, banality of evil. So evil is so common that everybody's participating in it. We don't even recognize it. So let's just take the elderly and the disabled. And I'm going to connect the dots very specifically after giving this introduction. The elderly, think about when I was a kid, virtually everybody took care of their parents, right? Once they were elderly and they couldn't take care of themselves. Now what happens? Now, that would be rare to take care of your parents. In fact, if mom misses the mail one day, she's shipped off to a dementia home, right? So that's the banality of evil, right? That's now become the really the standard of care relative to the elderly. And when you look at the percentages, I went all the way back to 1960 in my research, and you see the curve of, you know, it's an exponential curve as to how we take care of the elderly by putting them away. We kind of just tuck them away. Well, then how do we do that? What's the banality of evil with the disabled? 90% of Down syndrome children are murdered in the womb in the United States today. So what does that look like? Well, the young couple gets pregnant. They go into the doctor's office and the doctor says, let's schedule your amniocentesis. And their dumb question, their only concern is what? Does my insurance pay for it? Well, yeah, of course your insurance pays for it. Why? Because they're part of the medical industrial complex. So then they get the amniocentesis. They have another meeting with the doctor. He says, well, you're a baby boy. It looks like he's going to have Down syndrome. I think you should abort him, because, you know, it takes a lot of work to take care of Down syndrome kids. Well, I mean, that's first of all a lie. Second, you know, it's a lie built on a lie. Is the amniocentesis even right? You know, there's all kinds of things, but regardless, that has become acceptable to abort the disabled. All right, so now we take that to 1996. In 1996, Ezekiel Emanuel started publicizing that if you're a non-contributing member of society, you don't deserve medical care. That attitude, he was the chief architect of Obamacare. This whole satanic agenda, they crossed every T and dotted every I. And that was his attitude, being the chief architect of Obamacare, ended up being codified in Obamacare on March 23rd of 2010. All right, so then what is the excuse they use? So that kind of gives you a short timeline, but the overall excuse that they have used, which is a sub-excuse that, you know, there's too many people on the planet. We have to manage the population, which, you know, started in the first physical document I found was in 1967. The Rockefellers put out a plan to depopulate the United States. And, you know, so this is the easy subset. So how they sold this easy subset of the elderly and the disabled is through the spirit of collectivism. We need to take care of the good of the population versus the good of the individual. And there's 135 million Americans on Medicare and Medicaid. Well, Medicare and Medicaid is the elderly and the disabled. And that financial cost to our society is $3 trillion a year, 50% of the annual federal budget. So that's how they pulled this off. Yeah. I mean, so that's a long answer to a simple question, but it's not a simple question. People have to see this.
Yes. No, and it's clear, and I've talked about on here because I've studied this for a long time. Yeah, the depopulation agenda is their number one goal. They have many, many goals, but it's number one in cutting population. So anytime you see COVIDs or new wars or whatever, you know, oh, this is accomplishing their goals. And especially what's happened in all the Western civilization countries is because of the wastefulness and corruption of government, they don't have the money to provide the things they've promised in Social Security, everything. So that's why COVID was, get rid of these people, then we don't have to pay them their checks. So it was very clear. New York was such a perfect example because they just openly are evil. They don't even pretend to hide things there. Right. But in your documentary, one of the nurses that was interviewed, she goes to work up in New York in a hospital because they're paying $10,000 a week for a nurse, which is a lot of money for a nurse. She said at Elmhurst Hospital in New York, we were losing 100% of the COVID patients. I mean, just think, people watching this, think about that for a minute. 100%, not 99%. And she was the only one that had enough of a conscience to go, obviously what we're doing is not working if we're losing 100% of the people. And she tried to get things changed, and of course they wouldn't do it. Nope, the protocol is it. And then they fire her because of that. But it's sometimes hard for those of us that don't have that kind of mind for evil to even comprehend. Are they really that evil? Yes, they are. Satan is alive and well, like you said. He hates mankind. Anything to destroy, to kill, to steal, he loves it. And that's what this was all about. I love the fact that you're doing what is right by now going, no, we need to seek justice in this. Talk for a minute about the lawsuit that you're not happy to just sit there and go, well, this was unfortunate or whatever. I love that because our side doesn't do that enough. They just tuck their tail and run. And we should never do that because it allows the evil to continue to grow and thrive if we don't try to come against it. But tell us what you're doing with the lawsuit.
Well, this is quite a miracle by itself. I mean, there's so many sub-miracles in Grace's story. So when we decided to jump in, we told God, whatever doors you open, we'll walk through. So I mean, the door opened for the lawsuit. Early on, I thought we'll never file a lawsuit because I had done some investigation. You know, that's kind of a natural reaction. Well, I mean, these people need to be held to account. But I talked with the best medical malpractice attorney in Wisconsin at that time. And he said, Scott, yeah, I had sent him the records, and he said, even in slam dunk cases like this appears to be, we only have a 1 in 10 chance of winning. I said, what? I don't get it. What are you talking about? He said, I'll share a story with you, and you'll connect the dots. He said, I represented a family where the husband died, and he died because they sewed up a sponge inside of him during the surgery, and we lost. We lost the case. I said, how is that possible? He said, I brought in 10 experts, and they brought in 100. He said they circle the wagons around their own. Well, I get it now. I see it. We're going up. You know, we did a very unique thing with our lawsuit because we're paying for our lawsuit. Attorneys will not take these cases on because there's no money in them. It isn't, you know, I can say enough bad things about attorneys, but that's not the purpose. But, you know, there's good attorneys also, but they have to get paid. And so if you don't have the wherewithal to pay them, they're not going to take on the lawsuit. And it's because the numbers are against it. So we're going up against Ascension Hospital System. They have $30 billion in cash. $30 billion, okay? So you can't beat them. It is David and Goliath. They're going to bring in all kinds of people that's everything that they did with Grace was perfect, okay? Right? So now envision a jury sitting there and they hear one expert say they killed Grace, and they have 1,000 experts that say they did everything perfect. All right. So that's what we're up against. Yeah. So I'm bouncing a little bit here, but we uniquely decided because we're funding our own case, it's more expensive to do this, but we just thought, what's the goal? Our goal is not financial. We've already said we're not taking the money, assuming that we win, but the goal is to stop the behavior. So what we did was we didn't just go after the money, which is Ascension Hospital System. We have 5 doctors and 2 nurses who are directly involved with Grace's death as defendants. And that sends a message to all doctors and nurses that you cannot use excuses of following protocols for what you are doing. You made a choice and you have to be accountable for that choice. That's God's economy, right? God's economy is choice and consequence. You know, that is part of Satan's strategy on a macro level is we live in a society now with no consequences, right? So when you get a young person on your payroll, they're not used to, well, if they make a mistake, well, you know, the boss just pays for it, right? You know, when I grew up, that isn't how it worked. Yeah. But, you know, anyway, that's why we did the lawsuit the way that we did. And, you know, just to go through the numbers prevent, this was all set up way before COVID. So the numbers prevent a lawsuit from being filed. Specifically in Wisconsin, there's a state statute that limits the liability of the physician in a medical malpractice case to $750,000. So you think, well, that's a lot of money. Well, it's nothing. In Grace's case, our out-of-pocket legal fees are estimated to be about $700,000. Okay, so if you only can get $750,000, right, it doesn't make an attorney. The maximum an attorney can take if they're doing it on a percentage is 1/3. So you can quickly, and if there's only a 1 in 10 chance of winning, you can see why none of these cases ever get litigated.
That's right.
They're not going to take them on. So anyway, that door opened up. I mean, the miracles that have happened. So we filed the lawsuit on April 11th, 2023. There was, of course, motions to dismiss right away. And the judge heard the first motions to dismiss on July 14th. He told our legal team to file an amended complaint to pull out the battery claim of our lawsuit. And so it doesn't fall under medical malpractice. So we did that. That, of course, yielded 2 more motions to dismiss. He heard those motions to dismiss on October 30th. And he said, your entire case gets to proceed to the trial, which is set for First day, it's a 3-week jury trial. The first day is November 4th, 24, the day before the presidential election. So we're expecting, you know, Wisconsin is a swing state. We're expecting all the presidential candidates have to deal with Grace's murder. The Republican National Convention is in Milwaukee this year. You know, I am not promoting Republicans here. They're all in on this, folks.
Yes, yes.
So that's, it's not a political solution. We can't vote our way out of this, but the reality is our goal is to get national attention because we're trying to save lives. And, you know, the mainstream media is preventing this story and many other ones from getting the traction that we need to save the amount of lives that, you know, there's 200 million people who are completely asleep in our country. You know, they still watch CNN in a closet.
Yeah, no, that's why I do what I do here at Agenda Weekly, and everything is our number one goal now is to educate those around us to the point where their eyes are open and they see this battle that we're in and they realize they have to engage or they're going to pay the consequences of this. And talk briefly just for a minute. We kind of covered a little bit, but this is sobering for some people if you haven't studied things. What is the number one cause of death in the United States?
So this is this I would documented in the end of September, October. I did a 7-part series called Medical Murder is the number one cause of death in the United States by design. And that was all 2,500 hours of my research. I codified into a 7-part series. We have it posted on Rumble. It's linked on Grace's main website. So you'll have that in the show notes. But, you know, just to give people a, you know, a wake-up call to what I'm talking about, you think, how is that even possible? Well, even before COVID, medical malpractice was the third leading cause of death, even acknowledged by the CDC. Number one was heart disease at 700,000 a year. Number two is cancer at 600,000 a year. And number three was medical malpractice at 400,000 a year. Well, now that I started to see the light relative to this, there is legitimate medical malpractice, means a mistake. A mistake is negligence equals malpractice. But if they are hastening death equals murder. So if they're shortening our lifespan through, you know, chemicals in the food, vaccinations, all kinds of things, they're hastening our death. And that becomes murder. So now you start looking at just during the COVID era, which was 39 months long, we had 1.2 million American murders in hospitals. 1.2 million. All right, so now you can obviously add that to the previous 400,000. You see, okay, just during COVID, medical murder became number one, okay? But now when I've done the research all the way back to the beginning of the 1900s, when you see the current eugenics movement that the United States, we started the current eugenics movement.
Yep.
Hitler adopted the eugenics movement, and then what do? We do this. We're professionals at projecting our sin on everybody else. So we shake our finger at Hitler, and at the same time we're shaking our finger at naughty Hitler, we take the top 1,600 German eugenicists in the entire world, and we bring them back to the United States through Operation Paperclip. So, I mean, it isn't too hard when I start rambling on this. You can, oh my gosh, yeah, I can see medical murder is the number one cause of death by design. And I decided I better take this research and publicize it because, you know, none of us know when our last day on earth is, but, you know, when you start getting out there, you start thinking about, okay, well, you know, they have a vested interest in eliminating guys like us. So I wanted to just get it out there for the entire world to see is the bottom line. So no, it's out there now.
Yes. I'm so glad that you did. And so much incredible content is covered in the documentary too. And, I just, as more comes out, I think more are awakening, and that's the blessing of these tragedies. So what if I was to ask you, what are some key things people should be doing to protect themselves, their families, those they love? What's some of the key things you've learned?
Well, I'm going to key off of Genesis 50:20 to answer that question. So I'll paraphrase because I don't have it right in front of me, but Genesis 50:20 says, what you meant for evil, God meant for good, the saving of many lives, which is happening today. So the saving of many lives has two aspects, physical and spiritual. You know, physically, the most important thing you can do is change your belief. And because if you still believe hospitals are safe zones, you will never be protected. If you realize that there is an agenda to kill us, well, then you will do what's necessary to be protected. So, you know, I'm not going to go through a laundry list of all the things to protect you, but it's because it, you know, once your belief changes, your actions always follow. So, I mean, you'll, okay, yeah. I have all the links on Grace's website for resources for advocacy and documents. But there's not the documents, you know, the power of attorney documents, the medical directives documents, none of that can save you. Okay. But they're all a necessary part. You've got to be prepared. Okay. So that's the physical part. The spiritual part is infinitely more important. And God gave me this, Curtis, about it was in July of 22. So April of 22 is when I realized Grace was murdered. July of 22, you know, I was started to speak out. I'm doing a lot of interviews, and God warned me, don't use Grace's case or story. Don't use Grace's story just to expose evil. And because it plays into Satan's playbook. And so then I started researching, what does that mean, Satan's playbook? And then I saw very clearly that Satan, you know, if you, the Hegelian dialect, I'm just going to connect the dots with the Hegelian dialectic, because that term was introduced to me in July of 22, and that became the impetus for what I'm going to share next. So the Hegelian dialectic basically means problem, reaction, solution. And Satan plays this game exoterically, which means we can all see it, and esoterically, behind the scenes. So exoterically, we see it happen with COVID. So problem, COVID, you know, now we know it's a whole psyop, but I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a psyop or not. He plays the game. So problem, reaction was fear, solution, the jab. Okay, so now we have 71% of the world's population infected by the jab. You know, now that I see Revelation 18:23, that mystery Babylon will deceive the world with its pharmakia, you know, this all makes sense now. All right, that is the Hegelian dialectic as it played out with COVID. Well, what's the Hegelian dialectic esoterically? So problem, all the evil. I mean, if all this evil that you and I are aware of, Curtis, was exposed on the population in a day, which that's what's going on right now. There's a concerted effort to expose this evil. And that's what God warned me about. That would create the red pill movement thinks it's going to create us standing up against it. And we should be standing up against evil. That's not my point. But it would create mass chaos. That's the goal. Problem, all this evil. Reaction, chaos, fear of all the evil. Solution, angel of light. Okay. So then what does that look like? I mean, it's already in play. If you start paying attention, the entire Great Awakening movement is playing on this angel of light idea. And the reason I know it is because if you pay attention to the talking heads on that movement, they never mention how we got here, which is rejecting God, and they never mention repentance, which is the only thing God is after here. You know, if God hasn't started judging America already, that means COVID was a wake-up call to repentance. If he has already started judging America, it's still a wake-up call to repentance, because that's what the goal is here. We have to get right with God. We're not going to believe in some crazy great awakening after, you know, that we're going to go into the age of Aquarius. I mean, that is not what's going on here, people. This is, you know, we've got to get back to studying our Bible, because our Bible tells us this is part of the end time play. You know, Satan is imitating God to the nth degree. And God warns us, you know, the deception is going to be so perfected that even the elect would be deceived if that was possible. So, I mean, we can't grasp that because we have never been through this before. But I mean, it is the stuff that I've been studying I mean, it's the same stuff you're aware of. So, I mean, you know, most you can't sit down with somebody for the first time because their mind would be blown in one setting. But you know, I can explain just big picture. You know, think through that Satan's strategy is to be a false prophet, the angel of light. So then, we have safety and security. Read 1 Thessalonians 5:3. What does it say? It says that we're going to be duped by safety and security. Same old playbook. So yeah. Anyway, wow.
I appreciate that. No, it's been a pleasure speaking with you after having watched the documentary, and everybody watch the documentary. The link is below. For those that are watching, listening to this and not watching it, could you give us the best link if they'd like to donate to help in that case? What's the link for that?
The best link. So we have two. We have OurAmazingGrace.net has the documentary. Also, it has the medical murder series. It's got stories about Grace. All my research.
Okay.
Then we have resources. But the best link for donating is GraceShara.com. And Shara's SCHARA. That's a landing page that we created for the lawsuit that my daughter Jessica is running. And we're creating a database, Curtis, through that landing page. So when you go on it, you'll see it pops up right away asking for your name and email address. And that's specifically what we're asking for, because we want to be able to get a hold of people as we have calls to action as the lawsuit proceeds.
Yeah, that's great. So I encourage you people to do that. Those that are able, this is something so worthwhile to contribute to. I'm going to do it as soon as we're done here, because if we don't enable those that have a cause that's worth fighting for, if we don't enable them to fight that fight, then we're just getting snowballed by evil and what's going on. So I encourage you, those that are able, go donate, but then go to the website, which I've got on below, and watch the documentary. Just dig in there. There's so many different resources, a lot of his research and everything. I was just looking at it before we started, and there's a lot there. But then as you see things that are powerful to you, you need to share it with others. If you like the documentary, then you send that link to 10 friends. I mean, that's the only way this keeps rippling out, where then what the medical establishment and Satan meant for evil in taking Grace, God said, no, I'm going to use it for tremendous good, and it's going to save thousands upon thousands of lives, and maybe even change the way we do what we do. And that's the way God does things, which is so wonderful. But Scott, I appreciate you in the way you have done this. You have taken something that could make you bitter and angry the rest of your life, and you said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm using it for the Lord to glorify Him. And you've taken that energy to fight evil as an example and as a way to love your neighbor and to stand against it. And I just want to thank you. Make sure you thank your wife and Jessica for me specifically. Tell her I'm praying for her. But you guys just stay in this and don't be discouraged by the attacks of Satan wanting to make you think, oh, this is a waste of time and all that stuff. I know how it is when you stand for what's right. It's so much spiritual warfare going on.
You're right on. You're right on with that. You know, God has uniquely prepared us, and you know, I'm thankful for it. He's given us the stamina. Plus, I drink a lot more coffee than I've ever drank. So, God and coffee—that's the magic solution, Curtis.
That is. Well, I appreciate you very much. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Wasn't Scott just a sweet, kind, forgiving man? To be able to endure something like that, and then because he's a Christian and is a follower of Christ, able to actually forgive them, where he's not all bitter and angry, but he realizes, no, now I have a calling. Now I have a purpose to spare others the horror that I went through. And I hope you will pray for them. I hope you that are able will go and support them. The link is below, and where you can watch the documentary and have a lot more details, and then share that with everyone you know. But if we don't get behind people that are standing against the evil tyranny in the big systems all around us, then when it comes knocking on our door, we have nothing to say except, oh, I deserve this because I didn't do anything. So I really want to encourage you, if you're able, go give 20, 50, 100 bucks to help them. It all goes to lawyer fees to help them take on Goliath. And with God's blessing and help, it would be so wonderful if they were able to take this one Goliath out as an example and as an encouragement to others to realize, yes, you can take on the monster and win. Some takeaways for us are you need to be taking care of yourself the best you can so that you're less likely to have to need their services in any way, shape, or form. You need to eat healthy. You need to exercise daily. You need to get a good night's sleep each night. That's the best thing you can do for your immune system. You need to cut your use of technologies. Those are so unhealthy, staring at screens, whether it's a TV or a computer or a phone. You need to get outside and take a walk in the sunshine every day. Go walk a couple miles and just think about things and pray and just have that time of peace and quiet that I think is so healthy for us. You need to get a power of attorney for each member of your family. So if they do have to go into the hospital for some reason, a car wreck, and they're seriously injured, and they're there, you can let them know, I have the power of attorney for my son, or my wife, or my husband. So then they cannot do anything without asking you first. They can't say, well, they told me it was okay. They woke up out of their coma for a second and said, yeah, I'll take the medicine or whatever. They can't do that. Say, I'm the one that has the power of attorney. They do not. And so you need to go, everything needs to go through me. That's a key thing. We talked about that about a year or so ago. But I guess the key is, you know, realizing hospitals aren't a safe place to be. You might have to go there because of some accident or injury, but it's not a place you want to be. And when you're there, you have to be careful, you have to be purposeful, and you have to be prepared. Because again, this when you throw God out, you get a culture that has no value on human life. It doesn't mean anything. In fact, most have bought into the lie, especially if they've been through the colleges and universities. There are too many people, and we need to get rid of most of them. That is what is being taught, and that is what is believed by most people who are not Christians. Have pre-treatments ready right there in your home, where again, not only are you taking care of yourself, you're taking vitamins and things daily and exercising, but you also have hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, zinc, vitamin D pills, vitamin C, and all the different ones that help you just have a strong, healthy immune system. God made our system incredible, but we need to do what we can do to build it up because the food systems today are just tearing our bodies down. The processed foods, the genetically modified foods and things like that. And then I guess the last thing I would say is this, be prepared to die so you're not so scared of death and easy to be manipulated because of that. If you're a Christian, you should not be afraid to die. Obviously, you might go, I'd prefer to be here with my wife and children or whatever. But if your time is up and you're going to die, it shouldn't be a traumatic thing. It should be, okay, I've finished the course. I've kept the faith and I'm ready to go home. That's the point of this life, is to serve the Lord and then go home. So don't allow that fear to manipulate you like it does a lost man that has no hope. And some of you that are watching this, I know you're not Christians, and you go, ooh, death is scary. Yeah, it is if you don't have any hope. But that's why Jesus Christ came and died on the cross to shed his blood to wash away our sins, because all of us are vile, rotten wretches. All of us. The best are wicked in their heart. And so he came to forgive us. But you need to accept what he did on the cross for that. But anyway, I hope this was a blessing. Please consider going and donating to their Give, Send, Go to help them be able to fight this battle. And with God's help, maybe they'll be victorious in it. But I know it's the right thing for them to do, because it's all of our job to always stand against evil and seek justice in the things that are going on around us. But anyway, I appreciate you being with me so much. Our verse for this week is 1 John 1:9. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. What a reassuring, hopeful statement. All it takes is us humbly submitting and confessing to God the things that we've done, and then accepting what his son did on the cross and shedding his blood to wash away those sins, and we're cleansed from all unrighteousness. And that's why someone is able to go to heaven, not because they're good enough, because none of us are and none of us ever will be. It's because we've been forgiven. I hope you have a great week, and until next week, God bless you.